Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley, and today we're tackling one of the most controversial beverages in the modern world, and that's going to be energy drinks. So let's start off with this picture really quick. 6 o'clock in the morning, you didn't sleep well, you've got something big going on at work, whether it be a presentation or project that you've got to do, and then you've got to plan for your training session later in the day. You're dropping your normal Speedway, 7-Eleven, whatever, and you're looking at all these cans of energy drinks of what you're going to take to be able to kind of get you through this long day, whether that be, you know, Red Bull, Monster, Rockstar, C4, Ghost. Obviously, there's plenty out there that you can choose from, but what is actually in your energy drink, and are they helping or are they harming your actual performance? And what does the science say regarding your energy drinks? So over this next 50-ish minutes, give or take, we're going to take a scientific deep dive through energy drinks here for you. We're going to start by trying to understand what the beverages actually are, how they differ from a regular caffeinated drink, and the what you might consume in those actual drinks as well. And then we're going to break down the ingredient side one by one of the common ones and exploring how those affect your body and your performance, not only from like a mental acuity side, but also from a training perspective. And then we're going to look at the potential benefits that they have from athletic performance side. And I'm obviously not going to shy away from the concerning side of the research about the health risks of these energy drinks. So we'll kind of talk about not only the zero calorie versions, but obviously the sugar loaded versions as well. And most importantly, we'll help you understand what the actual peer reviewed research is saying about these drinks as well. So by the end of this episode, you should have a good amount of knowledge to make an informed decision, which ultimately is all I want to provide you with. I'm not going to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. You can make the own decision for yourself here of what you do from an energy drink perspective, and you'll be able to figure out how you can implement that in your nutrition strategy and your training performance side and how to use them safely and effectively if you do choose to use them. So before I go too deep into the details, let's kind of establish some quick important context here as we move forward. So the energy drink market has clearly exploded over the past 20, 25, 30 years, growing from basically nothing to being a multi-billion dollar industry. It's now estimated that Americans consume more than 3 billion energy drinks yearly, with that consumption highest being around among teenagers and young adults. So here's what's fascinating from the scientific side is that despite their popularity, energy drinks represent a relatively new category of beverage in the world of drinks and beverages and food and supplements, which means we're still actually learning about their long-term effects that we actually have on their body because, again, they are still relatively new in terms of that side. But most of the research that we have that we're discussing today has emerged in the past decade or so. So there's still some questions that we don't have answered, and it will take time to be able to study them more. So we're kind of just going with what the research that we have available to us at the moment. And this makes understanding that current science even more crucial so you can make that informed decision about your health and performance moving forward after this episode. So first, let's go about understanding energy drinks and what actually defines a quote-unquote energy drink. So this might seem obvious, but the definition matters because it helps understand why these beverages affect our bodies differently than other caffeinated drinks, say like a Pepsi or a Coke. So the FDA doesn't have a specific regulatory definition for energy drinks, but they're generally characterized by three key features. They have high caffeine, they're typically ranging in from 80 to 300 milligrams per serving, A blend of other active ingredients like taurine, guarana, B vitamins, amino acids, sometimes creatine, marketing that emphasizes energy, alertness, and performance enhancement. So if you compare this to, say, coffee, which contains caffeine, but obviously lacks all those other additional ingredients, although there are some that are now putting in different mushrooms. I know I do that. I love shroomy coffee. I think it's great. There's some other things that are being added, but you're still not seeing all the amino acids and what have you. But you see some of the stuff also added in sports drinks as well. But the focus primarily is on hydration and electrolytes on the sports drink side rather than the stimulation, where the energy drink now is focusing on the stimulation side, and they're trying to add in some sports-based stuff to make you seem that the extra added benefits of these extra ingredients are making it more of a sports-based drink, even though it's not. So energy drinks occupy a very unique space in this industry because it's combining the stimulant effects of caffeine with all the other compounds and supplement-based ingredients in there as well to help usually help enhance those effects, especially from a mental acuity side. Sometimes they might be other sports, and I'm talking about aminos and creatine, thinking that they're also going to aid your performance as well if you have it as a quote-unquote pre-workout. So energy drinks have evolved quite a bit since Red Bull introduced the concept to us in the 1980s. We can categorize them into several distinct types with each different implications for your health and your performance. So traditional energy drink contains both caffeine and significant amounts of sugar. So we're talking about the sugar-laden ones, anywhere from 25 to 40 grams per serving. These obviously both provide immediate energy from the sugar and a sustained alertness from the caffeine, but they also deliver a substantial caloric load as well. Now, the zero-calorie or diet energy drinks have replaced that sugar with artificial sweeteners, maintaining the stimulant side of the energy drink, but reducing the caloric content, especially, obviously, the sugar. This category has grown rapidly, especially those in the fitness community, because it's, again, zero calorie and it tastes good and it gives us the energy that we want, especially if we're talking about going from a training perspective. It makes it a very nice, convenient drink to have before we walk into the gym. So we also have natural and organic energy drinks, which are becoming a little bit more popular. They use ingredients that are considered natural, like green tea, yerba mate, guarana, things like that, that have being coined as healthier alternatives just because they're coming from the actual plant sources. And then finally, there's the performance focused energy drinks like I've kind of been talking about. They include the other ingredients, as I've already mentioned, creatine, beta-alanine, citrulline, things of that nature that are definitely targeted towards the more serious fitness crowd and or athletes. So now let's talk about the regulatory side of things. And understanding how they regulate can help us explain why their ingredient list can be so complex, but at the same time, also confusing. So in the United States, I don't know about other countries, but in the United States, energy drinks fall into a regulatory gray area because if they're marked as beverages, they're then regulated by the FDA as foods, which means they don't require pre-market safety testing like pharmaceuticals do. However, if they're marked as dietary supplements, they face different regulations with even less oversight. So this regulatory flexibility just lets the manufacturers basically include all the ingredients that we've kind of talked about in varying concentrations, which you will not know about. They're very likely they will not disclose what that is, which is why you'll see such a variety in all the different formulas and why somebody's pushing one thing over the other, because again, they don't have to disclose all that immediately on the can. So it just means as consumers, we need to be a little bit more informed about what we're consuming, especially if we're talking about a drug testing side, especially if we're looking at the safety and efficacy claims backed by some of the scientific scrutiny required for medication. So if you happen to be on a medication and some of these supplements could interfere with those, obviously there are some major health concerns to consider there as well. So let's talk about the key ingredients that you're going to typically find in most of your energy drinks. And that's first one is obviously going to be caffeine. I think it's kind of obvious. It's the ingredient that provides the primary energy boost that you're getting and that you're feeling. But understanding how caffeine works in your body is pretty crucial for actually understanding how you're consuming these energy drinks and safely consuming them as well. So the way that caffeine works is that it operates by blocking the adenosine receptors in your brain, Adenosine is a neurotransmitter that accumulates throughout the day and makes you feel tired. So when caffeine blocks the receptors, it prevents that tired feeling and creates a sense of alertness and energy. The amount of caffeine energy drinks obviously varies quite a bit from brand to brand, and obviously the size of the can that you're going to get. A typical cup of coffee is usually considered to have about 95 to 100 milligrams of caffeine, while energy drinks range from 80 to up to 300 milligrams in some of the larger servings like Bang or Reign. So to put this in perspective, the FDA considers 400 milligrams per day as generally safe for healthy adults, meaning some energy drinks deliver nearly a full day's worth of caffeine in just one dose. So 400 milligrams is quite a bit, if I'm being honest. I'm really actually surprised that it was this much. But if you have in two separate 200 milligram doses, then I guess I understand you have morning and afternoon. To me, I guess it does kind of make a little more sense when you think about it. But to me, I would have never guessed that it would have been that high from the FDA side. The form of caffeine does also matter as well. Some energy drinks just use straight pure caffeine, while others use something like guarana, which is more of a plant extract that contains caffeine, but it's generally absorbed a little bit slower, more sustained. This can obviously affect the intensity that you're getting hit by the caffeine, and then obviously the duration of the caffeine's effects. So influencing how you experience that energy and or the potential crash that you could have after the consumption of the caffeine. I'm sure most people have probably felt that, what that crash feels like, and it really, really sucks. Next, we've got taurine as an amino acid. It's probably usually the second most recognized ingredient in energy drinks, largely thanks to Red Bull's marketing, but it's also one of the most misunderstood. Despite its association with bulls and marketing, taurine is actually a naturally occurring amino acid found throughout your body, particularly in your heart, brains, and skeletal muscles. Typical energy drinks contain between 1,000 and 2,000 milligrams of taurine, which is several times higher than what you would normally consume through food. And so research seems to suggest that taurine may help with cardiovascular function, potentially improving exercise performance and recovery. Some studies indicate it might help reduce exercise-induced muscle damage and improve fat oxidation during exercise. So you can see why this is put in energy drinks, especially if you're looking at it from a quote-unquote performance perspective or an athletic perspective. However, here's where kind of the science gets interesting. While taurine appears to be generally safe at the high doses found in energy drinks, most of the performance benefits attributed to energy drinks in research studies are difficult to separate from the effects of caffeine. This raises questions about whether taurine provides significant additional benefits beyond what caffeine alone delivers. So something to consider there. Are you paying more for basically nothing? In most energy drinks, in my opinion, you probably are, especially if they're micro-dosing some of these ingredients. You might be getting a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but it's not really enough to actually give you the performance benefit, at least based on what's been studied on research for some of these. Next up, we've got B vitamins. They are definitely known for your energy production and support. That's very clear. Most energy drinks, though, are loaded with B vitamins, and particularly B3, niacin, B6, and B12, sometimes in amounts that we know are more than your daily needs. The marketing suggests that the vitamins provide energy, but the reality is it's more nuanced than that. Anybody that's ever had a spike, if you know, spike is legit, but I think at one point there'd be vitamin content. I think it was B12. I think when you looked at the can, I'm not joking. I think at one point when they were really heavily dosing it, it was like 86,000% of your daily value was B12 in there. And I think they changed it. I've not had one in a while. They're a lot harder to come by. I used to buy them for my gym. T-Nation just made them impossible to buy. It didn't make sense. I couldn't make any money off of them. And, you know, while it's not just about making money, it doesn't make sense to buy an energy drink and lose money on it at a gym, right? I at least got to try to break even, if not make a couple quarters off of each can. But man, I'll tell you what, those stuff would make you pee like crazy. And I'm sure the niacin was ridiculous in them as well. Going back to the B vitamins, though, they are indeed crucial for your energy metabolism at the cellular level, helping convert the food you eat into usable energy. However, if you're not deficient in these vitamins, consuming the mega doses doesn't create any kind of additional energy. So for most people, I think if you're eating a well-rounded nutrition plan and or diet, you're going to be fine on your B vitamins. It really becomes a concern if you are a vegetarian, because many of your B vitamins do come from meat as well. But it's like basically having all the gas in your car and then you're just putting more gas in there and it's not doing anything. I mean, I do think it also makes you pee more as well, especially if you have them in mega concentrated doses like that spike, as I mentioned. But that said, some people, particularly those with restricted diets, as I mentioned, health concerns, they may actually benefit from the B vitamin content. So the concern arises with fat-soluble vitamins and minerals that can accumulate in your body, potentially causing toxicity with excessive consumption over time. So A, D, E, and K, sometimes they will have some of those. Those are fat-soluble. You need to actually ingest those vitamins with fat, and obviously energy drinks don't have fat in them. So you might be also wasting some of those away as well if you're buying them for any of those additional fat-soluble vitamins. I don't know if I ever really see a whole lot of the fat-soluble, maybe vitamin E in some of them, but I don't really ever see a whole lot of fat-soluble vitamins, at least from what I've seen in energy drinks. I think people kind of realize that they'll waste to put that in your energy drink. So let's talk about some of the sweeteners. The main difference, obviously, between your traditional energy drink and then your zero-calorie energy drink is clearly going to be the sweeteners between the two. So your normal energy drink that's got the good old-fashioned sugar is normally 25 to 40 grams. And usually it's sucrose, glucose, or high fructose corn syrup. Those are kind of the three main ways that they get that sweetness. And it provides immediate energy, but also delivers anywhere from 100 to 160 calories per can or calories per serving. And if there's two servings in that, you can get a buttload of calories from an energy drink if you're getting the calorie ones. So if you're worried about the calorie ingestion, definitely don't want those. But the sugar in the drinks can obviously provide quick fuel for high intensity exercise, similar to like a sports drink. However, it also causes clearly rapid spikes in your blood sugar and your glucose levels, which is going to lead to energy crashes down the line as your insulin tries to bring your blood sugar back down. And also because it is just, again, literally added sugar in there. And that could also be a big pitfall as well in terms of the insulin-based spike. Now, zero-calorie versions clearly replace that with artificial sweeteners, most of the time using sucralose, aspartame, as well as acesulfame, potassium. Oh, I said that right. These clearly provide the sweetness that you get from them, and they're very noticeable in an energy drink, in my opinion, but you're not going to get the calories or the blood sugar spikes, which is very beneficial, in my opinion. But they also eliminate the potential for performance benefits that you might get from those quick-acting carbs if you would happen to need that for exercise. So my opinion, I don't think most people need it, but you guess you could make an argument there if you're trying to ingest quite a bit of sugar pre-workout, then that could be a performance benefit for you as well. But the research has definitely also raised questions about how artificial sweeteners might affect gut bacteria and glucose metabolism throughout the long-term implications of these effects are still being studied. From a performance standpoint, the choice between sugar-containing and zero-calorie versions depends largely on your goals, timing of consumption, individual tolerance of both sugar and artificial sweeteners. Again, artificial sweeteners are not bad for you. Some people are going to tell you they're going to kill you. Again, in small doses, totally fine, especially if you are dieting. And it's clearly better than the calorie-based version and ingesting 200 calories of an energy drink, because that's probably going to make you feel like shit to begin with. But also, secondly, it is calories that you're ingesting. And usually from a health conscious perspective, we're going to recommend that you don't drink your calories. You eat your calories, and energy drinks, they do freaking taste good. I'll be honest. They taste freaking good nowadays. So you really don't need the sugar in there to make it taste any better. It tastes great with just the artificial sweeteners as it is. Don't worry about saying that the sugar is going to be better for you than artificial sweeteners. There's no scientific evidence to prove otherwise, at least in the doses that you're going to be ingesting these artificial sweeteners. So let's talk about some of the athletic performance benefits here, and see what the science actually says about the energy drinks being able to do that. This is where things, in my opinion, get pretty interesting, but they can also get complicated, because research shows benefits in some areas and some concerns in others. So it's kind of a, you know, understanding of, is it worth it, and the long-term side effects from this. So multiple peer-reviewed studies have demonstrated that energy drinks can improve certain aspects of athletic performance. So in a 2018 systematic review published by the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutrition, they found that energy drink consumption was associated with improved endurance performance, increased power output, and enhanced cognitive function during exercise. I think anybody that's probably taken a pretty good energy drink, say like Ghost or C4, could probably say, yeah, I can kind of feel the difference when I do have one. The performance benefits appear to be most pronounced in endurance activities, at least based on the research, lasting longer than 60 minutes, and in sports requiring sustained attention and quick decision-making. For example, studies have shown improved cycling performance, enhanced reaction times in team sports, and better maintenance of power output during high repeated effort intensity bouts of exercise. However, here is the critical point that often gets overlooked. Most of these benefits can be attributed primarily to the caffeine content rather than other ingredients. So in research have compared energy drinks to equivalent amounts of caffeine alone. The performance differences are often minimal. This suggests that you might achieve similar benefits from coffee or caffeine supplements as a whole without the additional ingredients and potential risks associated with energy drinks. Very interesting. I know I do like my coffee. Coffee pre-workout also works pretty well from working out in the morning as well. Don't sleep on your normal good old-fashioned coffee, especially if you got some good quality coffee. So now let's talk about some timing and the dosages from a performance side. So if you do choose to use energy drinks for your performance enhancement, nothing wrong with that. Timing and dosage becomes pretty crucial. Caffeine typically reaches peak blood levels in 30 to 60 minutes after consumption. So the optimal timing for pre-workout training is going to be about 45-ish minutes plus or minus before your workout or your competition. The effective dose for performance enhancement appears to be 3 to 6 milligrams of caffeine per kilogram of body weight. So for a 70-kilogram person, that translates roughly to 200 to 400 milligrams of caffeine. Again, that's pretty substantial because 70 kilograms is 154 pounds. That's about my size. So most energy drinks are usually in that 200-milligram range, at least as of now, in terms of how they are mass-produced. This means that for most people, a single energy drink is enough to provide the effective performance dose that you need. But larger people may need more, and while smaller people clearly might need less. So, you know, one energy drink is going to affect each person differently, not only because of your size, but also because of your gender, your muscle mass, and obviously your tolerance as well. Research suggests that the performance benefits of caffeine don't continue to increase beyond the optimal dose range. Taking more doesn't necessarily provide better performance, and significantly increases the risk of side effects like the jitters, you know, being anxious and anxiety, and any kind of GI issues that you might get from either the sweeteners and or any of the other extra added ingredients that sometimes come in them. So it sounds like to me, for most people, one can, I think it's pretty obvious, is about all that you should take at any kind of given go. Specific performance areas where energy drinks have shown performance benefits in research studies as well. So for endurance exercise, multiple studies have demonstrated that improved time to exhaustion and enhanced fat oxidation. So the combination of caffeine and carbohydrates in your traditional energy drink can be particularly beneficial for events lasting longer than 90 minutes. So like running a marathon or whatever, there seems to be some pretty good substantial evidence that those actually might be a solid performance enhancer for you before you happen to go on a long endurance-based event. However, in power and strength activities, the research is a little bit more mixed here. So some studies have shown improved peak power output and reduced perceived exertion, while others show no significant benefits over a placebo. The cognitive benefits might be more important here than the actual energy side. They do show that improved focus and motivation can translate to better training quality, even if your raw strength isn't directly enhanced from the supplements. So the mental side gets turned on and you bring in a little bit more that could be making it worth the investment as well. From team sports and activities requiring quick decision-making, energy drinks have shown quite a bit of promise in maintaining cognitive performance during prolonged exercise and competitiveness. Studies in soccer, basketball, and rugby have demonstrated improved reaction times and decision-making accuracy when players consumed energy drinks before their competition. However, it's clearly important here that we note that individual responses are going to vary significantly. Factors like caffeine tolerance, your body weight, your genetics, timing consumption all influence how the energy drink is going to affect your performance. Kind of going back to that, it really kind of depends from person to person, even though they are mass-produced in their cans. You might be able to have half a can. There's even some that do say that, drink half a can to assess your tolerance. And I think something like a spike, that's a very good idea. If you've never had a spike, like I have several times. The first time I had one, I was kind of like blown away. I thought my heart was going to pound out of my chest. But that did get me hooked to spikes in terms of the performance side, like a lot. I love spikes. Good energy drink, super slept on. If you've never heard of Spike Energy and you see one, make sure you pick one up. Casey's gas station used to carry them. I don't believe they do anymore. I think you pretty much got to exclusively get them online at TNation/biotest, which is really unfortunate. Okay. But with that out of the way, let's kind of talk about some of the health concerns and the risks. And I think this is kind of the important part and kind of the controversial part for many people. We know the performance benefits. Most people can feel that, but what are the health concerns? Are there any long-term risks and things we need to consider, especially even for special populations? So the cardiovascular effects of energy drinks have received significant attention from researchers and health professionals. And recently, honestly, for good reason, several studies have documented concerning changes in their heart function following energy drink consumption. So there was a 2019 study published in the Journal of American Heart Association found that consuming energy drinks led to increased blood pressure and altered electrical activity in the heart for up to 24 hours after consumption. These changes were more pronounced than those seen with equivalent amounts of caffeine alone, suggesting that other ingredients in energy drinks may amplify the cardiovascular risk. And usually that's kind of been what's floated around in the fitness industry, is that having your caffeine with a high sugar seems to be much more problematic than just having the caffeine and like the zero calorie option that's really swung around for several years. I know personally when I've had it, one that's had sugar as well, even though I don't ever do that anymore, but you can definitely almost like feel them more so. And you can kind of think Four Loko as well is kind of one that got banned again because you're having alcohol and caffeine and carbohydrates. Talk about a recipe for disaster when it comes to drinking a lot of different stimulants and or alcohol. So emergency department visits related to energy consumption have increased dramatically over the past decade. The most common reported symptoms have included heart palpitations, chest pain, elevated blood pressure, and in the most severe cases, cardiac arrhythmias. And while these events are obviously pretty rare, considering the millions of energy drinks that are consumed every single year, they highlight the potential that there are serious adverse effects, particularly in susceptible individuals, especially if we think about like the gaming population, those that are very sedentary, stay up for long hours, and drink several of these in one go. You can really begin to see how this can be a very big health concern. So the major risk appears to be for those with underlying cardiovascular conditions and those taking certain medications, and individuals who consume multiple energy drinks in a short period of time. Again, that kind of goes back to that gaming population, again, not being very active or may have any of these other things as well. Young people are also particularly vulnerable because their cardiovascular systems are still developing and they often have less awareness of their individual health factors. So the very young population, we're talking like 15 under. First of all, kids that age shouldn't be drinking energy drinks anyways, because they should have a buttload of energy just because they're young kids. They get enough sleep. They eat a shit ton of food. They really don't have a whole lot of stress in their lives outside of boyfriends and girlfriends and acne. So I feel like they should have quite a bit of energy. Once you start to get older, then I understand a little bit more, especially why most of them say 18 or older to purchase or to drink or consume. So the high caffeine content in energy drinks can obviously disrupt sleep patterns even when consumed many hours before your bedtime. It's something I'm pretty big on when I work with athletes and talk to people that do choose to have energy drinks, that they understand what the half-life of caffeine is. And caffeine has a half-life of approximately 6 hours. So if that means you have your energy drink at 2 o'clock, you'll still have significant amounts of caffeine in your system at 8 p.m. and potentially even later. So poor sleep quality creates a vicious cycle, as I'm sure you know, where individuals feel tired the next day and then they reach for another energy drink to compensate. And this pattern then leads to chronic sleep deprivation, which then has wide-ranging effects on your physical health, your cognitive performance, your emotional regulation, how you feel. Like, it is a dangerous, dangerous cycle. And I can say firsthand that I have been in this cycle. I even have a post over on my Instagram, @bsmitley, where I talk about how I was basically on a gram of caffeine when I was starting my gym and working a full-time job as well as doing the gym and all the things, right? And how it was just a vicious cycle like that, and how I broke down in terms to get away from that. And I've made significant progress. And I will admit, I still love my energy drinks. It's kind of why I'm making this episode. Kind of thought it'd be something worth discussing and educating some people. If you need help breaking that habit, just reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to do that. But again, check out that post on Instagram. There's a lot of good actionable steps that you can take there as well. But just keep in mind that you can see how this cycle can be very vicious and can be a very big concerning problem, especially if you're listening to this from a strength conditioning performance perspective. Your sleep is crucial to being able to have the best performance that you can. So the research has raised concerns, though, about the mental health impacts of regular energy drink consumption. So some studies have found associations between frequent energy drink use and increased rates of anxiety, depression, stress-related disorders. And while it's difficult to establish the direct causation, the stimulant effects of these energy drinks may exacerbate existing mental health conditions or contribute to development of anxiety disorders in susceptible individuals. So not only are we talking about decreased sleep issues, but we're also talking about mental health issues as well. And again, that can stem from loss of sleep and bad exercise and what have you, bad nutrition choices. So this can really lead to a really dark and lurky place if you become very dependent upon a stimulant, especially high doses of the stimulant in terms of caffeine, but more so the energy drinks, because they're designed to taste good to make you continue to want to buy them and consume them. Your average energy drink tastes much better than your average coffee. Usually to make coffee tastes good, you got to add sugar and fat and different type of flavorings. And most people don't want to do that. So if you think about going to Starbucks, your Starbucks drink now costs $5, $6, $7, and that energy drink could have been $3. You know the energy drink is going to taste just as good, if not better, and be cheaper, and it's more portable, and you don't have to sit in the drive-through at good old Starbs. So you can see how these become very, very addictive in terms of their usage from a performance standpoint, and then also just day-to-day life. So let's kind of talk about the metabolic and digestive effects that you can get from energy drinks, or the issues that could be with these. So clearly the high sugar content in your average energy drink can have significant metabolic consequences. Especially if you drink them on the regular. A single energy drink contains as much sugar as 2 cans of just your normal soda, leading to obviously the rapid spikes in the blood sugar, the glucose and insulin levels, affecting your insulin sensitivity, all that kind of stuff. Over time, clearly the pattern of consumption will contribute to that insulin resistance, obviously weight gain, increased risk of type 2 diabetes, and then the concentrated sugar delivery in the liquid form. It's super problematic because it bypasses the satiety mechanisms that might otherwise limit sugar intake from like your solid food. So like obviously since you're drinking it, you don't have the rice or the potatoes or the oats or the vegetables, or the meat or the protein to take up that space in the stomach to kind of give you that feedback loop of, hey, we're kind of full. You can kind of stop eating now. And then it also slows down the digestion as well and the absorption, or if that drink liquid goes down, and I mean your body can absorb that much quicker because it's already in that liquid form. There's not really a whole lot of actual breaking down true substance of the food. But even the zero-calorie energy drinks aren't without their own metabolic concerns. The research is now kind of showing that artificial sweeteners may alter gut microbiota and glucose metabolism in ways that could potentially contribute to metabolic dysfunction as well. And obviously, while we clearly need more research in this field of the artificial sweeteners, and we don't truly understand those effects, we understand that they represent an area of ongoing scientific investigation and that there could be gut flora issues with these sweeteners. So while I'm not going to say that sweeteners are good for you, I'm also not going to say they're bad for you. It depends on context, obviously. But clearly, if they're giving you GI issues, you should not ingest them. And that just goes with any food in general. If you know a food or a drink or something bothers your stomach, intentionally ingesting it and giving your body issues from a digestive side is never a smart thing. So clearly, GI issues are an issue with energy drinks when the high sugar consumption or the sweeteners, if you have too much of them, or you have a hard time processing them in your gut. So the combination of the high caffeine content, artificial ingredients, carbonation can clearly cause some kind of stomach upset in many people. It can also cause acid reflux. I'm sure some people have probably experienced it sometimes that if you have a crazy high amount of some of this stuff, you can even get diarrhea, especially if you've already got a sensitive stomach or you just consume it directly on an empty stomach. That can also be very problematic as well. Let's really quickly talk about some of the special population considerations here. So there's certain groups that face elevated risks from energy drink consumption, and they should definitely pay attention to what they're ingesting, almost always in general with at least some of these. But pregnant and breastfeeding women should avoid energy drinks entirely due to the high caffeine content and unknown effects of other ingredients on the fetal development. I know for my wife, when she's been breastfeeding and when she was pregnant, she basically had no caffeine. I know for sure she had no alcohol, obviously, but I think she avoided caffeine the entire time as well. And the caffeine thing didn't get her that much, but I do know the research that she had did was showing that the brain development and the fetal development was never seen as a good thing to have the caffeine. And so she's not had that, and considering she's still breastfeeding at this time, if she does have an energy drink, it's usually maybe early afternoon, and she only breastfeeds once or twice a day now at this point where we're at with our lovely journey of parenthood, so that six hour, eight hour window, whatever, pretty much goes away by the time that he happens to breastfeed. So something to consider if you are pregnant, breastfeeding, where you're at, and that as well, keeping those half-lives in mind. Clearly, adolescents and younger adults, kind of talked about this, are also very vulnerable to these, not only because they are usually the heaviest consumers of these energy drinks, but because their cardiovascular systems are still developing. So the American Academy of Pediatrics has stated that energy drinks should never be consumed by children or adolescents. We know they clearly do it, but you know, pediatrics is saying they should not. Individuals taking medications, particularly those affecting your cardiovascular system or your central nervous system, should also be very cautious of these. And ideally, you're going to consult a healthcare provider or your doctor before you ingest not only caffeine, but in particular energy drinks and what exact energy drink. That way you know what ingredients you are putting into your body. That's always important, regardless of what you're eating or taking, but especially if you are on a certain type of medication that's going to affect your heart or your nervous system. The interactions between the energy drinks and the ingredients are and can be unpredictable, and they could obviously be potentially dangerous to your long-term health and especially your heart health. So let's kind of talk about the zero calorie versus the just regular energy drinks that are the sugar bombs. So the choice between the zero calorie and the regular energy drinks involves more than just calories. So let's kind of talk about the two categories and they differ and what those differences mean for obviously your health and performance goals. So your normal regular energy drink, obviously going to provide the immediate energy through the sugar. Again, giving you about 100 to 160 calories per serving, depending on the brand and the size of the can. But this can be beneficial, again, if you're using it as a pre-workout or fuel for extended exercise, long-distance training, where you need those carbohydrates. So the sugar can provide that quick, immediate fuel source that your body and your muscles and your brain may need to enhance that performance, especially if you're looking at it from a high-intensity perspective, from a long duration, again, long-distance running, cycling, things like that. Clearly, the zero-calorie options are removing that energy source, and they're still going off of the main stimulant of caffeine and any other added ingredients that they typically add into them, making it more suitable for those that are trying to manage their caloric intake, lose weight, still kind of improve their performance, maybe manage their blood sugar. But you obviously lose the potential performance benefits of those carbohydrates if you were happen to be needing those. So I think most people listening to this are probably going to lean towards the calorie-free option. And like I said, unless if you need to gain weight or need those kind of performance perspectives, I think the zero calorie ones are the way to go. And also majority of companies now are ditching the sugar laden ones. I think they have realized that their target audience that takes these usually are kind of the fitness enthusiasts that are really kind of ingesting some of these bigger ones, but you're still going to find the sugar ones and the major brands for sure. Let's kind of talk about some performance implications. So the choice between your regular and your zero calorie energy drink should align obviously with your training goals and the time of your consumption. So if you're drinking energy drink 30 to 60 minutes before your workout, the carbohydrates and the regular energy drinks can provide that fuel that you're going to want, especially for that high intensity activity or long duration based work. But if you're drinking energy drink just for mental focus, say during work or you're studying, or you got a project coming up, or you need something to go, you've got your coffee, whatever, then you're consuming it several hours before your exercise as well, being another example, then the zero calorie version is definitely the way to go, as I've kind of mentioned. So the other benefit too is that the absence of the sugar can prevent the potential energy crash that you might have later from the blood glucose levels after you get that big initial spike. So obviously those following lower carbohydrate diets, ketogenic diets, the zero calorie energy drinks are also a great way to keep your energy levels up high. And if you're trying to be in like ketosis, then you're not getting the sugar, obviously, for those particular diets. But people with diabetes or pre-diabetic should obviously opt for the zero calorie versions as well to avoid those glucose spikes and any kind of issues they may have with their insulin. So really quickly, the long-term health considerations. When you're considering your long-term health, both energy drinks present different risks. Your regular energy drink is going to contribute more towards your total caloric intake throughout the day and obviously long-term, and can promote weight gain if you're consuming them very frequently, especially like every day or several every day, because that's additional calories. So the higher sugar content obviously contributes to more dental erosion as well, and may increase risk of metabolic disorders with chronic consumption as well. So you're looking at obviously the dental side. People always talk about the sugar and candy and everything, but the energy drinks are very similar, and those are very, very sugar loaded when you think about how much sugar is actually in just the ounces of the can, the size of the can. So zero calorie energy drinks avoid obviously all the sugar related issues, but they introduce some other questions from the long-term effect perspective of our sweeteners. Again, we still don't know everything about them. And while current research is suggesting that approved artificial sweeteners are safe at normal, typical consumption levels, some studies still have raised concern about the potential effects on the gut health, glucose tolerance, and still creating food cravings from them. So recent research has also suggested that artificial sweeteners might not be as metabolically neutral as once they believed. Some studies indicate they may influence insulin sensitivity and glucose metabolism through the clinical, though the clinical significance of these effects still remains pretty unclear. So the key point here is that both types of energy drinks should still be considered occasionally used products rather than necessarily a daily go-to beverage. And if you find yourself relying on them pretty regularly, it might be worth looking at not only your sleep habits, but your stress levels and your overall nutrition. Eating well, feeling good, eating all the right things, fruits, vegetables, proper carbohydrate consumption, and enough protein, getting enough sleep to contributing to your low energy levels. So don't rely on the energy drinks is basically what I'm trying to say here. Look at outside factors as a way to improve your energy levels and feel good, and use energy drinks as needed, especially if you've got like a hard training day, or you know you're going to have a long day coming up from a work perspective, or you happen to forget a thing of coffee, right? Use sparingly or smart along the way to not have to be reliant on them every day. Again, like I was when I was having almost a gram of caffeine a day about 6-7 years ago. So here are some practical recommendations that I'm going to give you so you can have some safe usage guidelines, I guess. So based right now on the current scientific evidence, here's what I'm going to say from everything that I've read and kind of presented to you today. So most importantly, limit your intake to no more than one energy drink per day and avoid consuming them daily if at all possible. So number one, if you have one in one day, don't have any more. Just have the one. And do your best to not have one every single day. So find certain areas where they can fit well into your lifestyle, maybe an early morning training session or early morning run. Then maybe that means a little more warranted because they are easier to get down. Or if you're having that sugar in early in the morning before you go run, it can help give you some boost as you get up and get that done. You can treat them as an occasional product for specific situations, again, as you need to enhance your alertness and or your performance. You should always read the label of what you're personally purchasing and or putting into your body, and that you understand how much caffeine content is in each can that you grab, because again, they all do vary to some degree. And also remember, the FDA recommends no more than 400 milligrams caffeine per day for healthy adults, and energy drinks can deliver a significant portion of that in their one single serving. And if you consume other sources of caffeine, that's another thing to keep in mind, like coffee, tea. If you happen to take a pre-workout, you also need to factor those into your daily total as well. So my suggestion here is Save energy drinks for when you need them. Honestly, same thing for pre-workout supplementation as well, but you get the idea. And then mix your coffee either with decaf or half decaf, or like I do, two scoops of decaf and one scoop of regular. So I have basically 80 some grams of caffeine in my whole thing of coffee, even though I have three cups of coffee. So I get to enjoy my coffee, but not have 240 milligrams of caffeine right from the morning. And then if I happen to have an energy drink later in the day, I'm still right around that 300 mark if I do happen to have one. Also, don't forget that your timing is pretty important to avoid your energy drink consumption at least 6 hours before bed, if not earlier, if at all possible, for when you plan to go to bed, to minimize your sleep disruption. And if you're using them for exercise performance, to consume them about 30 to 60 minutes before your training sessions. You never want to mix your energy drinks with your alcohol. Guess what? We've all probably been there at some point if you've been a college student, had a good time. It's happened, but you should not do this because obviously the combination of the alcohol, which is a depressant, is being masked by the stimulant of the caffeine. And it can definitely make you feel more alert than you are, and it can definitely impair your judgment about your intoxication. So things that you can consider here before you go to grab your energy drink, consider whether you might actually achieve your goals through other means. So maybe, again, if you're looking for like a pre-workout, maybe you can consider more coffee or more green tea, or maybe you can find a caffeine pill so that you're not getting the other stuff from the energy drinks and other ingredients that you may not need. They're also more cost effective. But for sustained energy throughout your day, you obviously want to focus on better sleep patterns and schedules, managing your stress, maintaining relatively stable blood sugar throughout the day through more balanced meals and nutritional approaches. Eating your vegetables, fruits, fats, and protein will all help with that. And that usually people think about their need for energy drink when they have inadequate sleep or they have poor nutritional habits and they're trying to mask those up and put a Band-Aid on it. And you focus on those other things, you'll find yourself reaching for that energy drink much less and less, at least from my own personal experience here. And if you're seeking the performance enhancement side, consider whether just a simple carbohydrate and protein-based snack and maybe even just a small cup of coffee will give you similar benefits from the energy that you're looking for without the potential risks of the high sugar from the energy drinks or the other added stuff that you may not actually need, or if you're having GI issues from the artificial sweeteners or the sugar bomb if you happen to have one of the regular ones. And so a good pre-workout here would be a banana, like a cup of coffee, and maybe a small protein granola bar that's got 10 to 15 grams of protein. That would be a great, fantastic pre-workout snack. It's going to be considered healthier, and it's probably going to be considerably cheaper in the long run, if I'm being honest as well. And let's kind of talk about very quickly to cover my butt here. When should you seek medical advice? Clearly, there's going to be symptoms that should prompt you to seek medical attention and clearly discontinue your energy drink use. This could include chest pain, heart palpitations, headaches, difficulty sleeping despite being tired, or feeling extra anxious, so high levels of anxiety, or having panic attacks after consuming your energy drinks. If you find yourself dependent on your energy drink to function your normal daily life, or if you're consuming multiple servings or multiple cans per day, you definitely need to speak to a healthcare provider or a medical professional ASAP about getting healthier alternatives, managing your energy drink levels, and then finding the pattern that is leading to this underlying issue, because you're probably going to be having issues with sleep, stress, and or nutrition. And if you can use those to help you in the long run, that can help you get over some of your energy drink addiction issues, as I kind of mentioned, that I've had in the past as well. So let's kind of talk about a quick conclusion here. So as I wrap up this episode, let's think about the main things I talked about here. One, that the scientific evidence shows that energy drinks can indeed enhance certain aspects of performance, especially endurance performance exercise and your cognitive function. There's no doubt about that. However, most of the benefits can be attributed to caffeine, which you can obtain from safer sources with fewer ingredients. Again, going back to coffee or even caffeine pills. Caffeine pills are stupid cheap and super underslept on, by the way. So if you are a caffeine person, look into getting caffeine pills. I think you'll be impressed at what you feel from a caffeine pill, and you can get them for dirt cheap online. You can also probably get them at Nutribio if you really want to. Use my code SMITLEY10, S-M-I-T-L-E-Y, 10. That'll save you 10% off any supplements you happen to buy there. And they do have caffeine pills. Also got pre-workout if you're really into that thing as well. Obviously, there's clearly health risks, and they are real, and they shouldn't be dismissed. There are cardiovascular effects, sleep disruption, potential metabolic consequences that can make energy drinks inappropriate for daily consumption for certain individuals, especially those are vulnerable or may be having certain medications or pregnancy. You have the idea that we've already kind of talked about all those earlier, but clearly those populations need to steer clear of them. And the choice between regular and your zero calorie options should really just depend on your specific goal, but both should be used sparingly. And if you are in doubt, grab the zero calorie option. And most importantly, energy drinks should be viewed as tools for specific instances that you need a quick solution for to get through a bout of fatigue or low energy levels to be able to do something. They are not a solution for chronic fatigue or chronically low energy levels throughout your day. If you find yourself regularly needing stimulants to function or get by your day, you need to address those root causes again through sleep, proper nutrition, and stress management. Because clearly those are much longer benefits and long-term sustainable actions that will benefit your life down the long road, not just immediately as well. So what's the bottom line? Basically, you need to make informed decisions about energy drinks and understand that they can be good for specific sport performance benefits, alertness needs, but they're not really necessary for most people's health and fitness goals, if I'm being honest. If you choose to use, though, you just want to be mindful and understand the potential risks and benefits that we talked about here today. And remember that most effective strategies for sustained energy performance are the fundamentals, the basic ways to get the most energy out of your day, getting enough sleep, regular quality exercise, chances are if you're listening to, you already do that portion of it, balanced nutrition, sustainable nutrition habits with healthy foods, fruits, vegetables, carbohydrates, fats, and adequate proteins, and effective stress management throughout your life and in your relationships, and that will make you feel much better on your energy side. Energy drinks can obviously provide a temporary boost if you happen to need it, but they're never going to replace those foundational things that you should be doing anyways. They are a supplement. Again, 5% performance boost. The sleep and everything else is going to give you the 95% performance boost. So focus on the big stuff. Keep the main thing the main thing. So thank you for joining me today's episode going into deep dive of energy drinks and their effect on your health and performance. I hope I'm giving you something, one awesome thing you take away from the knowledge side that you can make a decision on yourself. Maybe you can decrease your intake a little bit, increase your intake if you need it for specific instances. You have just a more overall well-rounded piece of material here that you can always refer back to or share with somebody if they're having energy drink issues. Again, I was that person. I was there at one point. I understand what it's like to have a load of caffeine in your system all the time. I never want to go back to that. I'm glad that I have gotten off that. And so I want to be able to provide some quality information for other people if you happen to be like me and have been in that situation. I understand. I'm here to try to help you and to let you know that you can do it. And focusing on those other things has made a huge beneficial aspect into my life of not having health issues from energy drinks. So I appreciate you tuning in for today's episode. Hopefully, again, you took one awesome thing away. If you're watching over on YouTube, hit that like button. Subscribe if you're not subscribed to the channel already. If you're listening over on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, anywhere you enjoy your podcasts, make sure you also leave me a 5-star rating. If you happen to enjoy this episode, again, share it with a friend. Tag me on social media if you happen to share it. I appreciate all those things. Those all really help me out in one small way or another. So thanks again for checking in, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to Thirst for More Podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at bsmitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.